Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control, and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor, and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I'm
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And he messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him, and then you felt like you wasn't worthy, and so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room, and I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me, and I said, I want you to do this graph for me, and that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin.
Friends, it is time once again for our daily message of hope. And with today's message, here is Richard Eaton.
Friends, to brighten your day, here is our message of hope. A man who taught many wonderful truths about life once said, make the most of your present opportunities. Make the most of your present opportunities. Let me repeat once again. Make the most of your present opportunities. And the longer I live, the more convinced I am, this is a wonderful piece of advice. Appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Make the most of your present opportunities. So many of us waste our present time worrying about the past or the future. And actually, we can do nothing about either the past or the future. Little sympathy or patience should be wasted on the person who is eternally crying for the good old days or bemoaning that things aren't as they used to be. Naturally, they aren't. Time changes all things, as it is changing you right now. And were it not for change, there could be no progress in this world of ours. Probably a good bit of advice to all of us would be to live every moment as it comes to us, just as though it were the only one we had on earth. To appreciate the present before it becomes the past. Let your life be filled now with love, with happiness, with harmony, with courage, with faith.
Too many of us are wasting energy trying to relive the past. And we are putting off our good from day to day, from month to month, and from year to year, so that we never quite catch up with it. Why not live now? Forget the troubles of the past and stop dreading the future. The expression of our powers and abilities is governed by our thoughts. If our thoughts are dwelling in the past or in the future, our power and abilities will be lessened in the present because they will be trying to follow our thoughts to realms that do not exist. We need all our abilities right now in the present moment. We cannot afford to dissipate them by letting our mind dwell on the past or by worrying about the future. If we live rightly every present moment, we shall have no occasion to mourn over the past. What does it really matter today, what happened yesterday or some other day in the past? It is beyond our recall, so it is not worth the effort of worrying about it. Dr. Frank Crane expressed a bit of good philosophy on this matter in his short article called The Past. Says Dr. Crane, a good deal of morbid nonsense has been said and written and thought about the past. The past is irrevocable. We have been told in sermon and story, you cannot escape the past. The past can never be changed. And so on and so on. The whole trend of this thought being that the past is a kind of a Sherlock Holmes, dogging our steps forever, a sinister nemesis, waiting its chance to strike us down, the account book of an angry God, sure to confront us someday. All of this is morbid. Most of it is dramatic. The underlying sentiment of it is false and weakening and septic. As a matter of fact, our past, as Maeterlinck puts it so well, depends on our present and changes with it. Our past depends on our present and changes with it. What the past is depends upon the way you are now using it. Its effect upon your destiny will be gauged by how you translate it into the future. If we brood over the past and weaken ourselves with vain regret, with self-contempt and remorse, then that past will poison and undo us in the present. But no matter what the past contains of our sin or folly, we can, by a right use of it now, make it minister to our welfare. First of all, we can learn wisdom from the past. By it we can realize our faults to be corrected and our offenses to be atoned for. And with this wisdom, we can go on to better things. The only true repentance is so to use the past as to enable us to build a better future. Weeping and wailing and brooding, those are the luxuries of morbidity. The past is beneath our feet. We can go down in to it and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon that past to higher things. The great enemy of life is despair. The great friend is hope. Despair paralyzes, ruins. Hope energizes, for we are saved by hope. Face the future. Whatever the past has been, let it nerve you to spend your remaining days in faithfulness and loyalty to your better self. These are the words of Dr. Frank Crane, and I feel he certainly has the right view. Be concerned about your past only to the extent that it can teach you. The mistakes and sorrows of yesterday belong to yesterday. Yesterday provided sufficient time in which to consider its woes. Most of the worries, the griefs, the heartaches that we suffer are nothing more or less than memory of the troubles and hurts that we experienced some time in the past. If we could only remember that sufficient, unto the day is the evil thereof. Moffat renders this passage as a day's own trouble is quite enough for the day. And when you stop to think of it, isn't this true? We can readily understand from this that the miseries or woes of yesterday can enter today or tomorrow only through our memory. Before the end of yesterday, we should have put out of mind every disturbing thought caused by yesterday's situations. Those were yesterday's problems, so let them, along with yesterday, pass from sight and from memory. Let not the sun go down from your wrath is a mighty good bit of advice, or so it seems to me. We should not let the day close with our mind disturbed. It is too late to do anything about the way we let yesterday close. But we can do something about the way we let today close. Let us set today free in order that we may meet tomorrow, another new day, fresh and clean and unused, in the right spirit. Our wrath, mental disturbance, and physical miseries of yesterday have no place in our today. They only serve to crowd out the joys and blessings that are in store for us today. Each new day, a new world will begin for us if we do not carry into it the woes of yesterday. If we have not forgotten the woes of yesterday, we do not really experience a new day. To us, the day is just an extension of yesterday. When we let yesterday's sun go down, finding us wrathful and disturbed in mind, we are not obeying the biblical injunction to forget our miseries. We are not approaching the new day with a clear mind and a clean heart. The wisely given command to forget is a provision for our happiness. Were we to remember all our mistakes of the past, we should not have time to think of the good we want. Thou shalt forget thy misery. What shall we forget? What does the misery include? What comes under the category of wrath of mind? Everything not founded upon God or good and truth. It was meant that we should enjoy today to the exclusion of the wraths and miseries of yesterday. We are not to let one little rankling thought of yesterday sully the purity and beauty of today. You know, friends, the sleep that God gives us at night is but a form of his power to help us forget. Sleep is a vestibule through which we pass from one day to the next. We are to shed all our useless thoughts before we approach the next day. What of the wrongs that someone had committed against us yesterday or some other day? What of our jealousies and suspicions? What are the things we secretly accuse ourselves of? All these must go. We must forget them. They belong to the dream or nightmare of the past, in which we have awakened to a new day. Are you willing to obey the command, "Thou shalt forget thy miseries"? You alone can decide. You alone can reap the benefits of forgetting. You alone can decide whether you will spoil this new day, fresh and clean and unused, by harboring the adverse thoughts of yesterday. You alone can decide whether you will today remain in the wrathful state of mind of yesterday, or whether you will make the most of your present opportunities. The things of yesterday brought to your mind, which caused you to be disturbed, are quite insignificant today. Forget them. Learn to wipe from mind every thought that works against your highest good. Enjoy today to the fullest. You can do this only by approaching it with a clear mind, receptive to the good in store for you. Let each new day begin life anew for you, rather than being merely an extension of yesterday. Start out this morning by obeying the command to forget. Make up your mind you are not going to try to carry yesterday along into this brand new day. Erase from your mind any sense of blame, any memory of failure, all sorts of wrongs of the past. Was it not Ruskin who said, "Let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close"? Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourself. Let me repeat, let every dawn of morning be to you as the beginning of life, and every setting sun be to you as its close. Then let every one of these short lives leave its sure record of some kindly thing done for others, some goodly strength or knowledge gained for yourselves. It behooves all of us to live in the present in the way that will make of our future that which we wish our present were now. Yes, friends, it's up to us. We can go down into and wallow in impotent grief, or we can step upon the past to higher things. It is up to us. And so, friends, you've been listening once again to our message of hope. God bless you, everyone.
Hi, my name is Kelly Harden. I'm a licensed retailer, broker, and installer in the state of Texas for mobile homes. In my course, Heels, Deals, and Wheels, I want to teach you about mobile home investing. Did you know that 20% of all American households make less than $20,000 a year? It is likely that this percentage is much higher now since the COVID-19 pandemic. Did you know that people receiving Social Security as of June 2020 are only receiving $1,514 per month, just under $18,170 per year? So people on Social Security, along with people who make less than $20,000 a year per the government, can only afford $500 per month in housing. Did you know that since February 2020, that 33% of Americans either have missed house payments or have totally lost their homes and or jobs due to the COVID pandemic? Some Americans are currently in desperate situations. There are over 45,000 mobile home parks in the United States, with over 60 million people needing affordable housing. Did you notice I said some Americans are in desperate situations? I once heard a wealthy mobile home park owner say, "Don't emulate the rich, imitate the rich." You see, mobile home park owners will forever own the land, and investors like myself will always own the mobile home. So, where does that leave the mobile home tenant? Well, they will forever carry the mobile home mortgage or forever rent. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're saying to yourself, "I need to be a mobile home park owner, right?" I totally agree. But my mother always said, you got to crawl before you walk. Come join my course. I want to show you how I have invested with little to no money wholesaling, how I cash flow each and every month with little to no effort, and how there is little to no competition.
All right, so what's up? It's Mike, and I wanted to make a quick video. Of course, the name of my channel is called Flipping Mobile Homes. Now, true enough, a lot of you have watched my videos, and I've made some cool stuff, and I like doing stuff like that, but I also make money. And the focus of my channel is to teach people how to invest in mobile homes and be able to make money off of them like I do. I know a lot of people don't think about mobile homes as a way to, you know, get ahead in life, but I mean, it's great money. And I wanted to talk about something like this. So recently, I want to say about yesterday, I'm always looking for mobile homes to buy, used mobile homes to buy. Came across a mobile home. It was a 2001 mobile home. Kind of a fixer-upper, needed some stuff in there to be done, like, you know, a couple of panels and stuff like that needed to be repaired, a couple of soft spots or something in the floor. Not a whole lot of stuff, and if you're handy, you can do it yourself, or you can hire somebody else to do it. But I wanted to show you how easy it is to actually make some money when you got your stuff set up just like I do. So this woman is selling this home. She originally had it listed for $5,000, and then she recently dropped the price down to $4,000 after telling me that the home was pending. And then she recently messaged me saying that, you know, whoever it was that the house had, that she had pending for the house, they just kind of fell out of contact. They went incommunicado. So what this tells me is, number one, when I've got a buyer who had the home listed for $5,000 and then they dropped it down to $4,000, that tells me that this person is what I would like to call a motivated seller. This is somebody who's got to have that home sold and they need it gone yesterday and they want the money in their pocket. This puts me in a perfect position to make negotiations, right? Number one, why'd you drop the price of the home so quick? Obviously, nobody else is biting on your deal. Number two, because I'm in the position to buy a home, this gives me all the power in the conversation. So there's a training that I have that teaches you how to test your market, how to build up your buyer's list very quickly, and you can do this for absolutely free. Probably takes about 10, 15 minutes of your time, but the results are going to allow you to make money. So what I would do is I'm going to go out to that buyer. I'm going to take a look at the place, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to negotiate a deal with her to where I have the ability to be able to sell that home before buying it. I'm going to help them get rid of that home because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about for the seller, and I'm the person who's going to be able to get that done. So let's say with a home that's a 2001, so it just turned 2021. That home is 20 years old now, which is really good. It's a single wide, three bedroom, two bath, and those tend to go very quickly. So I know as a seller, I can easily get 10 grand for that home or better. I could probably get about 15 for that home. So my goal is to go out there, talk to this seller, acquire the home for as low as possible, all right? Just because they're asking $4,000 for the house does not mean that that's what it costs. I'm going to go out there. I'm going to hit them with the proposition, try to get it down to like three, and then I'll go on ahead and put that home on the market for, let's say I go on ahead and mark it up to about 8, 10, 15 grand. And the people on my buyer's list have already told me what they have to be able to put down on a home. And I'm going to show you some pictures of that. So what I would do is let them make the down payment to me, purchase the home, and then allow them to finance the rest of it. And the way I handle my financing deals are, I actually have an online payment portal system that no matter where this home is, I sell mobile homes in a tri-state area, not all the tri-state, but like, you know, within a reasonable amount of time or distance away from where I live at so that I can manage it. But I'm not going to go around to each home that I own and then have people, you know, just pay me on the spot and then write them a receipt. They can pay by debit card or electronic check online whenever that time comes each month. And this is a great way for you, even right now, just doing a free exercise that I'm going to give you a link to down in the description and a PDF that you can download. You can take a free lesson and you can learn how to do it yourself. And this is a great way for you to be able to make a quick, I don't know, 5 or 10 grand based off of somebody else's money and using the tools and the tactics that I can show you. So I hope this video has been helpful to you. And like I said, I'm going to tag that video that you need to go on ahead and watch it in the description down below. You can follow the link to my website, put in your email address, and then get the free information that I've put together for you. And let's start making some money together, man. This is Flipping Mobile Homes. It's time for you to start winning, because the events of 2020 have shown us anything is that no help is coming from anywhere. We cannot rely on politicians to put together stimulus checks and stuff to keep us and our family and our loved ones afloat. But this is a good way for you to go on ahead and get started and get into the field of buying real estate and selling it and making yourself some sustainable income that's coming in all the time. And that's it. I'll see you in the next video. Peace.
And here on It's My House Today, we're starting a new segment. On Mondays, we will be featuring Mobile Home Mondays. Mobile Home Mondays. Anybody who's interested in mobile homes, and we got quite a bit of interest from it from last Wednesday, last Thursday, and then Saturday afternoon we did a special segment on it too. So every Monday we're going to be featuring Mobile Home Mondays here. And I wanted to, on our blog talk, got some program notes here, which is listed on the blog talk platform on this particular program. Give you some statistics. In the United States, there are 120,756,048 households in the United States. Out of that, 20%, that's 28,981,451 households in the USA, 20%, which is 20% of the households of the United States, have a total household income of $20,000 or less per household income. There are over 45,000 mobile homes or mobile home communities in the United States, and there are over 60 million people in need of sustainable housing in the 50 states here in this country. So let me compare that to statistically to some other places. The continent nation of Australia has a population of 25,360,000 people. So there are more people here. There are more households here where people earn no more. The household, I'm not talking about the individuals, but the household earns no more than $20,000 a year. So that's over 28 million. And Australia, which is a continent nation, has 25,360,000 people, period. Also, it's greater than the country of Israel. Israel has a population of 9.2 million. That's it. That's it. So there's loads of opportunities within the mobile home, greater community. And so anyway, on Mondays, Mobile Home Monday. So anybody interested in that, that's what we're going to cover from here on out. We're going to go to another audio, which I think you'll find pretty interesting, on mobile homes.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, Hometown Heroes Edition, Chicago.
Chi-town, what's going on now?
Shout out to the shout out to the west side, to the south side, north side, east side, every side.
We was out of the south right now.
Yeah, we in south side right now, for sure.
Again.
What area are we at specifically?
So we in Washington Park.
Washington Park, shout out to Washington Park.
Those gonna know, y'all know.
Yeah. So we got a very special edition today. But before we start, we got some housekeeping items we want to make you guys aware of. It's not too late to register for our workshop, our first ever workshop, on 10/17. So as we said before, every single month we're gonna be having a workshop in person, but also live stream for anybody anywhere in the world. And there's going to be a different EYL guest is going to speak about their area of expertise. So the first one is with our guy, MG the Mortgage Guy.
It's
going to be about financing your first real estate deal, real estate financing for your first deal. So you go to our website, earnyourleisure.com, on the events tab, and you can register. As I said, you can do in person in New York City, but you can also live stream it and you can watch it. You don't have to actually watch it while it's going on, but the live stream, like once you have it, you can watch it whenever you, so if you're at work or whenever. So make sure you do that. So, yes. All right. So now we have a very special episode. I'm actually interested because this is something that I don't know anything about.
Zero.
I'm going to educate myself on this. So Byron and Shanice, dynamic couple that also are business partners as well. So congratulations, first and foremost.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Thank you.
So you guys, all right, you're in the mobile home industry, right? So for anybody that's not familiar with that, that is Home on Wheels, pretty much, right? It's interesting because I met you at the event, our networking event, which was amazing, by the way. And
Thanks for coming.
Yeah.
Thank y'all for having me.
And you was telling me about it, and you know, I was thinking, like, this is just an interesting thing. Because we talk about real estate a lot, but we've never spoken or covered mobile homes. And you was actually educating me, because a lot of people, especially where we're from in the Northeast, we have derogatory, which I learned was a derogatory
we
name.
We shall not say.
Yeah, which is, well we used to call it a trailer home or in trailer park, but it's not called, it shouldn't be called trailer park or trailer home. It's a mobile home and a mobile park. But long story short, you can actually invest in these properties, and it's just like real estate. You can make money, you can wholesale, you can flip, you can fix up. And it's really interesting. It's a lot less as far as how much money you have to put into it.
Yeah.
It's a lot kind of easier, finance and all that kind of stuff. So, all right, before we even get into the details, can you tell your story of how you got into the industry?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Okay. So basically I've been trying to do real estate for 4 or 5 years, right? And when I tell you, like, capital, credit, I was having a lot of issues with that. And so, man, March 3rd of 2017, that was the day I was fired from work.
It's a great day.
Yeah, great day.
that's my birthday.
What kind of job did you have?
So I was in the transportation industry. I was a driver manager.
Okay.
And so, man, for that time, I'm like, man, how am I still getting real estate? So, man, I was in a life coaching program at that time to become a life coach.
Mm-hmm.
So I will say that helped me up to be where I'm at now. And that's something I hustled. Like, I'm just trying to get into it. And at the time, man, I was driving Lyft to pay the bills, and I was always listening to podcasts. And this particular day, I happened to find a podcast. It was on mobile homes. But mind you, I'm driving, and people are like, man, turn that off, man. I ain't trying to hit that. I'm like, come on, man. So I sent it to her. I sent it to Sharnice, like, hey, take a listen to this, man. I think this is going to be special. Send it to her, and then...
Yeah, so he sent me that podcast, and that podcast is on mobile homes. And I always tell Byron, the biggest thing that I learned from that podcast that so happens to be on mobile home investing, like he said, and the biggest thing that I learned from that podcast was you can literally get started with very minimal capital. Credit does not have to be good. And those are the two things that I feel like at the time, because me and Byron were new investors, those were the things that were kind of holding us back. So once I heard that, I was like, okay, we need to get into this niche of mobile homes. So I came home, I told Byron, like, look, we about to get into these mobile homes. Like, I know we trying to get these 3 flats right now here in Chicago. We were trying to get buildings at the time. But like I said, our capital, our credit was not so good. So I was like, look, let's try something different. Let's go outside the box and let's conquer this. And, man, it's been history ever since.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, especially as a couple doing it.
Yeah.
Y'all supporting each other. We don't see it. Like, this is the first couple that we've seen on our podcast. What did it take to have a belief in each other? Did y'all always trust each other? Like, how did that develop?
Man, dope question. So the biggest thing for myself going through that journey, I learned a lot. I took a lot of L's, went broke, messed up my credit, car repo, like all the worst, right? And so she had my back. She was the one person that out of everything from family, friends that had my back. So it was like, yo, with this knowledge, like, I have nothing but trust, and I'm going to have so much patience in this. And she trusted me. And I was to see her growth, and she just dug and became a student, literally with no entrepreneur experience at all. And I'm just looking like, yo, she a rock star.
I got to keep her.
So, all right. So, okay. So you listen to the podcast. You sent it to her. What made you say, okay, this is something that we – because you both had lost your jobs, right?
Yes.
So what made you say, okay, this is something that we're going to do full-time? And what was your first – deal, like, what was the first thing that got you into, like, buying your first mobile home?
Man, so honestly, I had nothing else to lose. Like, I had took so many L's. I'm like, yo, this gotta work. One of these gonna work. So again,
common theme. Right?
So, you know, we got the scavenging, man. We took out a high interest loan for $10K, right? I mean, and listen, the interest rate on that was 24%.
Wow.
Yeah. Like credit card?
No, a loan. Yeah, I call them shark loans. Oh. Almost like a payday loan.
Y'all went through like a credit union or something like that?
Lending club.
Okay. Yeah.
And so we got that, and then we just dove in. We started hitting the road. We had did a little education, but we didn't know. Like, we literally learned from the School of Hard Knocks.
Mm-hmm.
So we hit the road. We went all the way down to Cincinnati looking for homes. We didn't know. We were trying to see if we were going to move homes. And, man, our first deal, She actually found this guy and up in, it's called Love's Park.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I ended up, again, prospecting via Facebook. I found this guy. He was a park manager. He had a lot of older homes, and he was like, look, we got some homes under $5,000. You should come out and take a look. That was definitely our budget because starting out, we was like, we only want to stay under $5,000. So went out there. We looked at a few homes. We ended up getting two. One home, we paid $3,700. It was move-in ready, so we didn't have to do anything to it, no rehab. It was beautiful. And the second home we purchased for $500. We put a little bit of rehab into it, about $3,200. We ended up flipping those first because, of course, we wanted to go ahead and make some profit so we can continue to invest. So we ended up flipping those. We made $19,500 in less than 30 days.
And then you said, this is
it.
This
is it.
Yeah, that's it, right. And that was it, right. That was it.
At that time, you were saying, like, that was already half of your yearly salary, right?
Yeah, so at that time, prior to me getting fired, I worked at the gas company here in Chicago, and my salary gross, I was making about, like, 39. So you thinking about, I made about close to 20,000 in less than 30 days. That was eye-opening for me.
Not by gas.
Yeah, right.
Now that's powerful because a lot of times people are afraid to leave their job. I posted something the other day, like, don't let a fear of losing $50,000 a year could stop you from making $50,000 a month. Mm-hmm. And you could break that down to anything, but like your situation is like, listen, you actually was blessed to get fired or lose your job, however you lost it, because it's like, let's say that you might have stayed in that job making $39,000, mm-hmm. and it's like a lot of times people are like scared to leave, mm-hmm. and you would have never even knew that you could possibly make $20,000 a month,
yeah,
and then 5 years from now you could be making $100,000 a month, like, you know what
exactly.
I mean, so
exactly.
It's crazy, but
exactly.
I like that you guys supported each other, mm-hmm. and took the leap of faith, because that's extremely important, especially in a relationship. It's like, mm-hmm. you know, you tell your partner you lost your job and it's like, you better get another one. Yeah, so like, what made you have faith in him and even like, okay, like, you know, I'm gonna support you on being an entrepreneur. You guys are entrepreneurs. Like, I'm gonna support you on being an entrepreneur. Like, with no business background, it's not like you guys were entrepreneurs before that. Like, what made you have faith? Because he said you were the only person that really had faith. So what made you have that faith?
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, prior to, you know, Byron's entrepreneurial journey, like, you know, we were already, I guess, quote unquote, talking and dating before we got serious. And at that time, like you said, he had a good job. You know what I'm saying? So once we got back linked up, at that point, he was going through his hardships or whatever. But by that time, we had already built our friendship. We was already best friends. So it's like, as a best friend, why would I turn my back on him? You know what I'm saying? Like, I was there for him through all the hard situations that he went through in his life. And then I feel like he was also there for me because at the time I had just lost my job. I was very stressed out. He was there picking me off the floor, telling me every day, like, Char, come on, like, we about to do this together. Like, I'm thinking about us now, our legacy, generational wealth. Like, he was feeding that into me every single day. It's like I had no choice but to rock with it. Like, you don't get that every day, especially from a partner, from a relationship. Like, that's powerful.
Good man.
Yeah. She got me up here.
It's like a Lifetime movie.
Right.
No, that's beautiful. I mean, I obviously, you know, I'm a married man, so like, I can relate to everything that you're saying. Like, having somebody that knows that whatever we're gonna, mm-hmm. whatever I do is for us, right?
Yeah.
So like, we are one. So like, mm-hmm. the decision that I make or she makes, it's for the betterment of us and our family, right? That legacy. So that's powerful. Shout out to y'all.
Black love, black love. So, all right. So I don't think people fully understand, like I said, especially like we come from New York. And you actually told me that there's a lot of mobile homes in New York.
Yeah.
But like the New York City area, metropolitan area, and, you know, a lot of listeners that may be from like cities, they don't fully understand how big of an industry mobile parks homes are. Mm-hmm. So I did some research. So it's 22 million Americans live in mobile homes.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, how lucrative is it, like, on the ROI standpoint, how lucrative is the mobile home industry?
Man, well, listen, it's the highest cash-on-cash return of any real estate investing. Like, I didn't believe it at first until, I'm going to give you an example, our average returns are 250% ROI on per deal that we do.
How long does it
Our normal turnaround is 60 days. Now we're to the point that we flip a house, we flip in less than 15 days.
Wow.
Okay. So, all right. So since you said that, can you break down the deal and like kind of explain like how does that work?
Cool. So I'm gonna break down with a deal. So we had a deal. We purchased a home for $3,000, mm-hmm. right, in Indiana, and the home that it didn't need any work from an older lady. No, in most of the situations, right, most people don't really know the value of their homes, and $3,000 said cool. So what we did was we said, you know what, we're going to open up for seller finance. We're going to help somebody get affordable housing. In that area, the average rent, we normally base it off the average rent, it was $800, right? So we said, okay, we're going to be comparable. Now, in a park, if you're doing mobile home investing in a park, the park has lot rents, just like HOA fees, okay? So you have to pay monthly those. This park was at $372.
So, all right, a lot fee. What's the lot fee?
So it's like an HOA fee. They're paying for the trash. They're paying for the water.
Just to stay on the actual.
Exactly.
So the park owns the land.
The land.
Right. And
so
you own the actual.
You can't just park your mobile home anywhere.
No.
No.
It has to be inside of a licensed, like a park that has a permit and it's
mm-hmm.
owned. It's like a. Okay.
Right. And so normally like the ones that you drive, like the RVs, those are different, right? You can go drive those and go into a park and pay like a fee. But normally the ones that you see are kind of just like on actual like land, like those right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You can move those, but it's not costly.
Mm-hmm.
Normally about $2,000 or so to move them, depending on how many miles.
Okay.
But in this case, so we said, hey, you know what? We'll take $428 monthly. Okay. So it was $800. So how it did, we put them on a 60-month term. Because remember, it's a mobile home is pretty much a motor vehicle in most states. It is not actually real estate. It's real property,
mm-hmm.
unless you're putting on land. So this particular deal, we're getting $800 a month. We're getting cash flowing $428. We put them on a 60-month term. At the end of that 60-month term, that $3,000, we turned to $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
Was it $25,620?
Mm-hmm.
So that's 700% return on investment we created.
So the rent that you guys were collecting was $400 a month,
$428.
Yeah.
And how much did you buy it for?
$3,000.
How do you buy something for $3,000 and charge? How much were they were paying $800 a month in rent?
Yes.
How is that possible?
So with that, so instead of them renting an apartment, right? Because if they rent an apartment for $800, they got no equity in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we're providing is just equity in that house, right? The thing is, we buy it for so low, right? We don't necessarily have to say, okay, we're going to only sell it for $5,000, right? We still operate, because if you think about the number, it's still a house. It's still a home for them. So at the end of the day, a $25,000 house, where are you still going to get a move-in ready $25,000 house?
So, that's crazy. But I was just like, why would somebody not just buy it on their own? If they, like, why would you rent for $800 if it only costs $3,000 to buy?
Yeah. So the thing is, for us being investors, it's almost like we buy an off market property,
mm-hmm.
right? The most people don't really know that, hey, I can go get that. And if they do, they definitely take advantage,
yeah.
right? For example, we have a house Sharnice just sold this week. Mm-hmm. We got the house for $1,500. We sold it to him for $6,000. He's going to move the home, right? We're still doing a favor. But then at the same time, when we offer seller finance, we just offer. I usually do anywhere from like $18. I look at it, $18 to $25 per square foot.
So you could actually, with your financing, you could have no money and get a home?
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting. So I can, right? So like I go in, I have no money. I'm like, yo, I want to get this home. That's where you come in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm offering. Because see, the thing is, most banks don't lend to mobile homes. Like Warren Buffett, he has two lending companies because he understands that. Warren Buffett is in this game. He owns Clayton Homes.
Okay. Warren Buffett lends mobile homes?
Yeah.
Yes.
So he owns Clayton Homes. That was an acquisition he bought in 1997. Clayton Homes is the largest like manufacturer home company in the country.
So banks don't give the loans because are they looking at it as an automobile loan? Like how are they looking at it?
They're looking at it as a depreciating asset.
Yeah.
Whereas
okay.
for us, we look at it as value.
So it's a depreciating asset because it has wheels and anything that with wheels depreciate,
mm-hmm.
correct?
Right. Yep.
Yep.
So is that true?
Not as.
Right.
At the end of the day, for us, we look at it, we solve an affordable housing crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the biggest thing. Like cities, we know what, the cost of living is going up,
mm-hmm.
all right? Wages are still staying the same. So people are getting pushed out. Like we see it every day, like where it's gentrification, people can't afford. So for us, it's like, hey, listen, I get it. You've been living in this apartment for the last 5 to 6 years. Why don't you get your own asset, right? Because at the end of this, you can do the same thing. Most people that we educate that buy houses from us, we even teach them, like, hey, this is how you sell your home
mm-hmm.
to get your money back or make more on your home.
So where are these mobile parks located? In proximity to major cities, right? So we live in the New York tri-state.
Mm-hmm.
How many miles typically would a mobile park be located, right?
Yeah, good mm-hmm. question. So for you guys, I know you guys got one in Staten Island.
I think I told you that. We've been in New York our whole lives. Like, I think, I don't think I've ever been to Staten Island.
Shout out to Wu-Tang. And then we got a few students out in New York, and they normally work with parks in Jersey.
Okay.
So they go over to Jersey.
Yeah. And about, honestly, I would say about 60 miles, if you're willing to go upstate New York. I'm not sure the exact mileage, but I know you guys have a lot central and upstate New York.
Is there like a mandated distance, like that the like federal government will say, like, this is the furthest distance you can go before you create a park?
So here's the thing. In modern day, so mobile home parks, the reason why you don't see a lot of them popping up right now, because here's the reality, taxes, right? In America, it costs on average like $12,000 to send a kid to school. I'm going to give you guys an example. I'm about to blow your mind real quick. Our taxes on our mobile homes per year, $160. Our taxes on our mobile homes in Indiana, $37.
For the year?
For the year. So you got to think about it. If you have a kid living, if you got children, you got two children, and it costs at least $11,000, $10,000 to send them to school, that city is not eating from that. So cities really don't really like mobile home parks because of the taxes-wise. And most mobile home parks, they're using the city water. They're using the city sewer. So, and you know, in that case, it's like, yo, we're not eating off that. We don't really like this over here.
That's I pay more in lunch money than that.
All right. Here's a question. You live in a mobile home, right? What is plumbing? How does that work?
So everything is above ground. Everything is above ground. So the cool thing is, like, you know, if you need something fixed, they can go under the actual mobile home to repair.
So, but, like, your actual, like, you go to the bathroom, it goes underneath the, like, where does that go?
Is it like a septic tank down there?
Yeah, so normally most parks, so here's the thing, most parks either have, they're hooked up to city sewer, so they will have the hookup so it can go, you know, along with the city, or they have septic tanks.
Got it.
Okay. So, like, if it comes from your truck or your mobile home into like a underground thing.
Yeah.
So all right. So if the taxes are so low, right? So what's the gig? Because it has to.
Something's up, right? Something's gotta be up. Right?
Be like, what's going on here?
So all right, the taxes are low. You can buy a home for low. You can sell it for high. So what's in it for the city or for the town to actually house these places, and how come more people aren't doing it?
Good question. So I would say per state, well, the first question I'm going to answer, you said, like why do cities, so most mobile home parks are grandfathered in. A lot of them really popped up in the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s began because after the war, the government invested into mobile homes, right? After they were using actually old war planes and using the tin. That's why most mobile homes are kind of like that aluminum. They had a surplus of aluminum, so they like, yo, how can we use this? Boom, we built a house. So that's why mobile homes actually really start going. So in the 70s, once HUD got involved in the 70s, that kind of depreciated, right? The value of mobile homes, because at one point mobile homes were the place to be.
Like, yeah, you told me that. It used to be luxury.
Yeah. And it was kind of like suburbia. Most mobile homes are in rural, like suburbia, right? If you go to a lot of mobile home parks, they look like little, I guess you can say, suburban neighborhoods. And when HUD got involved, unfortunately, think about the next generation, people start moving back to the city. It just kind of took the value down. So it was a need for affordable housing, but with cities, these places were definitely grandfathered in. There's a lot of cities that, for example, let's say an owner actually sells a mobile home park. Sometimes they're like, yo, that's uninhabitable. Like, they don't, because they don't really want it, because they don't really benefit from the mobile home park.
So when did mobile homes get the bad name of, like, trailer parks and trailer homes? Like, when did that shift? Because you said at first it was luxury, and then it obviously kind of got tarnished, and people have bad ideas when they think about that. So, like, at what point did that even, like you said, like trailer park trash, stuff like that, like, how did that happen?
So, to my knowledge, it was an article, I'm not sure the exact year, but I think, and I know it was like in the late 60s, and somebody had wrote a newspaper article about trailer trash. And that just kind of stuck. The name just kind of stuck. And then, of course, movies play out. You think about horror movies, right? Mm-hmm. 8 Mile,
yeah.
Right?
I'm telling you, when y'all said mobile homes, the first thing I thought was Ozarks.
Yeah.
I was like, hey, yo, okay, it must be similar to that.
Right, right.
And so the ones they show on television, or they depict, I look at, honestly, it's almost like in the hood, right? They depict, like, you know, what they, for example, Chicago, they're going to depict on certain shows that is just the gutter, you know what I mean? Yeah. But at the same time, It's very nice mobile home. It's a luxury. People don't know it. In San Francisco, they have a mobile home park that literally million-dollar mobile homes. The same double wide that I can go purchase for $15,000 is going for $1 million in an area in San Francisco.
Yeah, I saw Will Smith that had a mobile home. It was cost like $2 million. It was like a two-story mobile home.
Yeah,
like
he
travels like to movie sets with it.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's dope. All right, so now we got the backstory. So now in the second segment, we're going to go into some details and go over terms and key definitions. All right, so now we're going to go over some key terms, definitions, things of that nature. But before I start, we talked about pricing, but on average, since we're in Illinois, how much does a mobile home cost on average?
So the average price in Illinois, used mobile home, is right at $7,500.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're looking for something new, like if you're getting a brand new home, they can start it right at about like $35,000, $40,000.
All right. Okay. And one of the things, in the negative connotations that go with mobile homes, is that they're not safe. So one of the questions I had was like, how safe are mobile homes?
Man, I love that question. So so mobile homes are actually, since they're built in factories, they're wind tested. They're built to last, outstand tornadoes and earthquakes and things like that, right? The thing is, unfortunately, like you've seen maybe CNN or so, they may show a mobile home park with like three tops, you know what I'm saying,
right,
gone.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, back, I think, what's the movie? I forget whatever it is. But anyway, with the houses flying all the way around and things like that, mm-hmm. No, it's not like that. They actually built safe.
So what's the lifespan, right? So sometimes, like, you know, a traditional brownstone might be built in 1909. What's the lifespan of a mobile home?
Good question. So the older ones, anything that's built after 1990, up to 30 years. The new ones are built to last within 45 to 55 years.
Okay.
Okay. So as far as you was explaining that title, right, and it's different from, like, when you buy a home, like a regular home, and you have a deed. So can you explain that process as far as, like, the title? It's a lot. It's easy to do it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so as far as a mobile home, like, a mobile home is considered a motor vehicle, so it's kind of like a car. So when you are selling the asset, you're just going down to the DMV or whatever your motor vehicle department is in your state, and you're just transferring that title.
That's it?
Yeah.
How long does it take?
About 2 weeks to come back.
So the closing, what's a typical closing from buying a home and having it up and running? Like?
Yeah, so honestly, it's like a day. I mean, so you buying the home, of course, we're dealing with the park, so we're going to deal with the park manager. Our buyer has to sign some paperwork with the park. That's about 30 minutes to an hour. That's signing a lease for that lot rent that we talked about earlier. After that, we normally take our buyers. We go to the DMV together. We do that paperwork, transfer the title. That's about, again, a 15-minute process, and then they'll send the title back in the mail. That normally takes about 2 weeks, and then the new buyer will get the title. They'll own the asset now, and then we move on to the next deal.
That was good.
Yeah.
So one of the things when we were doing some research, it was like, there's a difference between modular homes and mm-hmm. manufactured homes. What's mm-hmm. the biggest difference?
So modular homes, more times you see concrete-based, where so they have, like, they are more plotted on cement, right? Whereas a manufactured home is, They're literally sitting on cinder blocks.
Mm.
So that's what you see is called skirting. So you'll see some vinyl that's like right around the bottom of that. So that's what covers that up. But the house is actually sitting on cinder blocks.
So, all right, what about insurance? Like, insurance for a mobile home, is it different from insurance for a regular home? Is it car insurance, since it's actually transportation vehicle? Like, how does that work?
Are we calling Geico? What are we doing? What are we calling?
Yeah, you literally can call Geico, though. Like, you literally can. So when it comes to mobile home insurance, it's very similar to what you would get for homeowners insurance or renters insurance. So you literally can call, like, Geico, State Farm, like your normal insurance companies, and just let them know, like, you would like to get insurance on your mobile home. And the typical cost for that is about, like, $14, $15 a month. So kind of similar to what you would pay for renters insurance.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what's the process? Because you said, like, the park owns the land, right? But you mm-hmm. own the actual mobile home. Mm-hmm. What's the actual process to getting your mobile home into a park?
All right, so that process, you'll be really looking for a mobile home park owner who's looking for houses. And right now it's like a gold rush, right? Like, literally now out of the 44,000 mobile home parks, 4,000 are institutionally owned, meaning like just corporations that own it. But it's really like the Wild West, because they see the opportunity. Cap rates are crazy on these things. So for them, what's happening is you have literally call like bird dog watchers. They're going to other people's parks, right, from another owner. So let's say Rashad has this park, right? Mm-hmm. Now he hires me to come in Troy's park to scout out some of Troy's houses to take back to his park.
Mm-hmm. Like recruiting.
Right.
Dirty game.
Man, trust me, bro.
So, like, what's some of the incentives that a park or a lot owner would say live in this lot as opposed to live in that lot?
So the one thing, the cool thing in the newer mobile home parks, what they're trying to really do is make it a community base. Because that's one thing about mobile home parks get a bad rap. It's a really good community because everybody knows each other, right? Mm. So, like, for example, it may be, you know, the amenities in the park. We got parks that got swimming pools and basketball courts. And
in the mobile home park?
In the park.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in the park.
Yeah.
It's like a whole kind
of
exactly. Yeah. And so it's really just the amenities. Like, what can this park provide, right? Like one park, I love it because they give beautification awards for whoever has the best lawn, right? Some parks are pretty much like a concrete jungle or on concrete, but a lot of parks are, I mean, have, like, huge backyards, gated mm-hmm. fences and garages. And, like, you'll be surprised at seeing some of the way this stuff is developed.
So, all right. So you have a mobile home. You put it in the lot. But now the lot has a backyard and all that. So you have to pay for that backyard. Is that part of just the lot fee? Like, how does mm-hmm. that work?
Yep, that's part of your lot fee. I equate it to almost like taxes, mm-hmm. right? Because I know here in Chicago, depending on a single-family home, you may be paying anywhere from $3,000 to $6,000 on your taxes, right? I look at it, that's the same as taxes if you add that number. If you're paying $375 a month, when you look at the yearly, it's pretty much still in line with taxes and some people pay in their cities.
So in real estate, you know, when people have multiple units and multiple assets, they have property managers. In the mobile home game, you have park managers. Mm-hmm. Is it similar, or what's the difference in those two roles?
So the park manager's role is really to oversee the park, for example, you know, make sure they fill in houses, you know, somebody's not paying their lot rent, make sure they send them their notices. A lot of parks have staff, so they have other handymen on the park. But the cool thing about it is they're not really most parks don't. They do rentals, but they're not, let's just say, like fixing everything in the house, should you mm-hmm. say that.
Okay.
So, all right. So there's two types of communities, right? There's age-restricted and family communities.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you explain that?
Yeah, so all age community would be like, you know, 18 to really all ages. The restricted ones is a more, they're normally 55 and older, so it's more so retirement communities. And you normally see those like down south, Florida, West Coast, like Arizona, California, Las Vegas. Like you'll see the more restricted communities in those areas.
Okay, so how many people, like how many homes are in a typical community?
It varies. It could be anywhere from 30 upwards to 500 homes. It really just depends on that particular park.
And you said that the park manager doesn't come around to collect rent, right? So what's the process when somebody doesn't pay? Is it the eviction process? Are the deadlines the same as state regulated, or is it faster for mobile homes?
Honestly, from what we see, parks don't play no games, man.
No.
Like, I'm going to say this. Like, most parks that we deal with, they give you 10 days.
Okay.
You get a 10-day notice, and then after that, I mean, you can definitely pay, but if you're past that 30 days, they got paperwork already, and they're starting that eviction process.
Wow.
So, all right, what's the maintenance on mobile homes? Is it car maintenance? Is it house maintenance? Is it a combination of both? You have to change your oil? Like, what's the deal with that?
My timing belt, bro.
Right.
So, I mean, literally, like regular house maintenance, right? Mm-hmm. The cool thing about a mobile home, all the materials are much cheaper than a traditional house, right, brick and mortar, because you're dealing with most houses come with, you know, vinyl floors. They're coming mm-hmm. with, they say wallboard instead of drywall. So most of your materials are cheaper. So, like, maintenance, like I tell people, if you're doing a full rehab on a mobile home, let's say a full gut, $12,000.
So speaking of that, you said fix up. So I took some notes. It's vinyl, it's rail rock, it's foam insulated, cinder block. So like, mm-hmm. all right, you're fixing up and you're rebuilding a mobile home, right? Mm-hmm. How does that work? Like, you get a contractor to do that, and like how do you do that? Like, is it just like a regular home or?
So you can. Here's the thing: you can get a contractor, but there's a lot of mobile homes that use special contractors, right? They just do mobile homes because a lot of the maintenance is a lot of times cheaper, and the materials are cheaper. If I take somebody who has been doing all single family houses rehab, he comes to my mobile home. Trust me, my price is going to be a little bit higher because of what he's used to, right? but at the same time, we call him handyman. We got like a team of literally five guys, and when we need a rehab, we call them. They go ahead and do it. And the biggest thing for us, like, man, shout out to my guy, Packy Hood Estates, but just like we keep it clean, safe, and functional. That's our biggest thing, and that's his. We actually learned that model from him. Clean, safe, and functional. And longest, that's our biggest thing. Like, we're not coming in there trying to do a bogus job because you have people. Mobile homes don't have inspections really like that.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really like, again, since it's a motor vehicle asset, it's not as strenuous as a house. Like, mm-hmm.
There's no appraisal process.
Exactly.
No, not at all.
Exactly. And that's why for us, it's like, yo, we adding this value because we're not going to let nobody come in and tell us like, no, wait, this is only worth $4,000. Like, no.
So as far as like getting started, right, how much money do you need to get started in the mobile home real estate industry?
I mean, really, we always tell our students like little to no money. It really just depends on your market and really just how you're prospecting. You can literally, like for me and Byron, we don't really touch anything over $5,000. That's the strategy that we have created and stuck with. But even in, like, the higher markets, like, we always say, like, you can wholesale mobile homes. Like, you can still literally go in and still, we call it, like, being that helper in a situation and helping a family to sell their home. And then, again, you going in with no money down. You're just now just marketing the home and then taking the profit off that and then still making sure that they get the amount that they're looking for. So
how does the wholesaling, because I know wholesale, anybody's not familiar with wholesaling real estate, it's like you're pretty much like the middleman. You never actually own the home,
right,
but you can make a profit. It's like if Troy wants to buy a home and you want to, if Troy wants to sell a home, you want to buy a home, and then I can come in and be like the middle person and then make like $10,000 or $15,000 and I don't really do any work. There's no risk. There's no money that I put up anything. Mm-hmm. Is it the same process for mobile homes?
Yes, exact same process. You know, you can put them on the contract, and the reality of it right now in this market is really no competition. Mm-hmm. That is wild. Like, we're in Illinois. We only, like, that we personally, we know of 10 other investors, but we've only met two. And and out of those, and the newer ones are our students.
Wow. So as you're talking, I'm thinking to myself, right, yeah, it's cool to get the mobile home, right? Mm-hmm. But you said that the person that owns the land is the one who makes the profit. How do I go about getting the land? Do I have to buy a lot and then get licensing to have mobile homes on it? Like, what's that process?
So that's dope. So, for example, let's say we get a lot of people who are like, yo, I got like 30 acres down in Mississippi. Like, can I put homes on it? It's like, yes.
Okay.
Yes, you can. You know, like, honestly, if it's your land, the biggest thing is, let's say you just got raw land, right? So, yeah, now you're going to have to get septic and you're going to have to get the well system installed.
Okay.
On the high end, that can run you up to like $22,000. On the low end, you get all that installed. I hope you stay under 10. That'll be perfect. But let's say 12.5, right? Yeah. Now, moving the house, depending on where you're moving it from, a lot of moving companies start off right about that 1,000 range, as long as it's under 100 miles, depending on what it is. But let's say on a high end, your move is 5,000, right? Let's say you all in $30,000, right? Now you go get a house. You want to get a brand new house. Now you all in. Let's say you got another $40,000, right? You're still under $100,000. So you're still under $100,000, right? And think about this. Now you can become the bank, right? You can either lease that land out forever, or you can just either package that up and now sell the land and the house.
Okay. So for buying it, do you buy it in an LLC, or you just buy it like as a regular person? Like, how do you do that?
So we started with buying it in our personal, but now we purchase all our homes in LLC.
Why? Just from protection standpoint?
Yes, and then from there we go ahead and roll them in a trust.
So, why? Can you talk about that? The trust?
Yeah, and it's really just keeping your name off out. We don't want people to know how many assets we have. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we just learned from a mentor that hey, this is just an extra layer of protection for us.
Smart businessman.
That's dope. You guys, I saw on your Instagram page, you said one property, you can get one property, I guess, like in the area, well, somewhere, I don't know where in America, but you can get one property for $45,000, and that could generate an income of $800 a month, let's say. Mm-hmm. Well, you can get nine mobile homes for $45,000, and that generates an income of $2,700 a month.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Profit margins.
Yeah. So I actually made that post.
Okay.
First lady of mobile homes. I definitely did that just to kind of show the margins as far as, you know, when we say like mobile homes is the highest cash on cash return on any form of real estate. So in that specific example, I kind of used the numbers that I got from one of my realtor friends who ended up purchasing a property for $45,000. In that situation, she was a landlord. They were renting it out for $8,000. So in that case, again, we always look at long term, the 60-month terms, because we normally put our tenant buyers on seller finance for 60 months. So in that case, if she's making in 5 years, she made a little bit over $45,000, so kind of close to like $48,000 mark. So she made her money back. But I took that same number and I was like, look, let me compare that $45,000 to what you can do in the mobile home game. So with $45,000 in the mobile home game, again, if you're sticking at that $5,000 range that myself and Byron stick to,
nine houses
for $45,000, right? Remember, we talked a little bit about earlier about that seller finance, putting our tenant buyers on payments. Now, if you're putting them on payments for a minimum of $300 a month, mind you, we're no landlords in this situation. So we have no landlord responsibility. We're playing the bank. So in that $300 a month for nine homes, you're looking at $2,700 a month, again, in cash flow. So you already tripling your cash flow profit. So now let's look at 5 years. How much you looking to make in 5 years? It's like over $160,000. I think it's $162,000. So you've tripled your initial investing in mobile homes. So then it's like when people always ask us, like, why do y'all stick to mobile homes? That's why.
Brian? Good job, man. She knows our numbers.
All right, man. Yeah, that was impressive. So, yeah, in the next segment, we're going to talk about education, and we're going to talk about scaling and a few other things in the last one. All right, so in the last segment, we're going to talk about education, scaling. But before I start, I just got a quick question. So, all right, there's different ways, traditional real estate, right? You, like, buy and hold and make money off of cash flow, or you can, you know, flip properties, right? So I know right now your main focus is flipping, but is there profit in buying and holding and getting like cash flow from mobile homes as well?
Oh man, definitely. For example, I got to give a shout out to one of our students, Harold, but he's down in Georgia, and he purchased a mobile home for $1,500, put $1,000 into it, and what he did was he saw opportunity with truckers. He understand a lot of guys stay extended stays, so he rented out per room $500 per room of his mobile home. Right? Okay. So think about it. He got his money back in like 3 months. Mm. Now he's making all profit. He just created $1,000 cash flow. Well, I'll say this. I think his lot rent's like $375.
Mm-hmm.
Now, right around that range. But at the same time, he's still bringing in over $600 a month just cash flow.
So the lot fee plus whatever your charge for rent, that's what gives you the total rent price.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. Yep.
So what's your vision to scale? Like, what's your plans on scaling? For your personal business brand.
And so we definitely want mobile home parks. Mm-hmm. So the larger goal with that is to get an acquisition where we find somebody who has a portfolio, 10, 20 mobile home parks that's looking kind of just to retire, right? And just pretty much purchase that portfolio and just build from there and really open up the floodgates for more people to invest in mobile homes.
Is that just something like just being in the industry you'll know, or is there like a database where you can see like these people own this amount of mobile parks?
Right. So we've been doing our homework. We got the top 100 companies that do it. Literally, to be in the top 100, if you own over 15 mobile home parks, you are in the top 100 of the companies.
How much does it cost for a mobile home park?
So now the prices went up. I would say on the average for 50 pads plus, you're looking at about like 1.2, depending on the region, 1.2 mil, 2 million. Really depends on the region, right? I've seen parks that has 100 pads that was going for 1.2 mil.
Pad is just the area that's designated for the...
Exactly.
How much revenue can that bring in on a year?
Wow. So, man, that's a great question. So, for example, I look at it, let's say you have 200 pads, right? And then you're getting $400 per pad. Normally, for a park to be fully occupied, you're looking at a good park, 95%, right? 95% of those houses are filled. So if you look at your cash flow, I might pull out the calculator real quick. Troy, I heard you dope with numbers, man.
I'll run them in my head.
I'm trying to think. But the cash flow, I know I had some parks that pretty much, but they're like netting per month in six figure range. and just net after everything. So, I mean, literally a lot of...
Like after a year, you could probably get your million back.
Oh, yeah.
And then 100,000, let's say on the low end, 100,000 a month, you'd be making from that.
Yes.
And with like maintenance, you got to have like maintenance, upkeep and all that stuff.
Maintenance guys. You may, if you have a park manager, that comes with your cost. Of course, taxes, right? But a lot of times, if you, the thing what I've learned about in the mobile home park, if you give your, if you give the tenants more responsibility, so they're responsible for water, they're responsible, that's how you cut costs, really.
Also, like the utilities is up to them.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So you guys are teaching people how to get into the industry as well, right? What, how are you doing that?
So, man, we got several products. We got an e-book. We have an e-course. We do group coaching. We do a free live webinar every Wednesday just to kind of get people acclimated, because that's the biggest thing. Like, we look at it like we wish somebody would have showed us this years ago. And then we see the opportunity, and it's low competition. Like, literally, I don't care if it's 10,000 people that started tomorrow. It's not going to be saturated.
Right, so y'all are selling people the mistakes that y'all made.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So being that y'all in this industry and it was new to y'all, what are some of the mistakes that you made during your first deal?
Well, I would say one mistake we made being new investors, we was at a park, and the park managers, they had just bought the park as well, so it was new for them too, and they were showing us a house. And, you know, just talking, we actually made the mistake. Well, it actually wasn't we. It was Byron.
It was me. Stick to it.
But, no, he made the mistake of letting them know how much capital we had, right? So he ended up telling them, like, oh, yeah, we got about $10,000.
Oh, that's on him.
Right. Yeah. So, right. So, of course, you know, they tried to, finesse us. They tried to finesse us out of a deal, and pretty much was showing us a home that we knew was only worth about maybe a couple of thousand, but he was trying to sell it to us for about, I think, $4,000 to $5,000, and then saying, like, we would still have to put another $5,000 into it for rehab, pretty much taking up all of our capital for our first deal. So we quickly learned, like, yeah, you got to hush your mouth when you're going out to invest, and, you know, some other mistakes. I know you can bring up some.
Man, not winterizing the house in the winter.
Yeah.
Like, those pipes, since they're above ground, man, that was... And it's not bad. Like, honestly, literally the first time I tried to go a cheap route, so I hired a guy, he told me he could do it for $250. I'm like, $250 for plumbing? Yeah, let's go.
Right.
And he just I paid for it, and then I had to pay another $5. Little, but again, $750 for plumbing, right? Like, what they do that at?
So,
not home.
What about lack of market research? I saw that was one of the mistakes that a person could make, right, as far as, like, not knowing the market well enough?
We get so many DMs of people that just maybe jump on a webinar, or, and I get it because it is exciting, right? Mm-hmm. But you still, it's terms and it's just, it's not a lot, right? But if you try to jump in there and not really knowing, it can cost you more money, because most people hear, like, man, I can start with $5,000, and then they'll take that $5,000, and then they, and it's just like, okay, well, what about, we always tell you to budget for lot rent, right? That's part of your expense. Mm-hmm. If we tell you to negotiate lot rent, sometimes park managers may say, hey, you know what? Like, let us rehab this. We'll give you a month or two free. But if you're not, you still got to incorporate that into your cost. It can take you on a long end 6 months to sell your house, right? So you got to just incorporate just the little cost that can add up.
On the rental side, when you're getting people to rent, what's the turnover? Are people signing six-month lease? Or, like you said, some of the truckers do maybe a month lease. What's the turnover?
So, honestly, most people, we realize that they're willing to stay at 5 years max in mobile home parks, because you got to think about it. It's just like, I look at it like this. It's just like the hood, right? At certain parts of the hood, that's just a gutter that people know they want to make it out to, and then they move to another part of the hood that's a little bit better, but they still want to move out. So it's levels to it, right? Unless you're just in a mobile home park in Miami off the water, you probably not, you know what I mean? Like, you want to stay there for 10 years plus, right? But, you know, so honestly, for us, we provide anywhere from 2 upwards to 10 years, but normally most of our average is like 3 to 5 years. But the turnover, we rarely get people that want to leave unless they're family. Like, for example, we had a family that a couple, they were expecting their third child. So, you know, they need more space now. So in that case, but normally they're going to stay.
So I saw on your page also you said that people's mistake is buying high and selling low, right? So, like, all right, how do you, like, well, how does that happen in the mobile home world?
Yeah. So I'm going to say this. Profit is profit. I'm not going to say we teach you how to be greedy, right? But we teach you how to make large returns. So, yeah, for example, if I buy a house for $10,000, And with our system, you turn around, you only make $2,000 off, or you make 12. I'm happy for you that you made money, but it's just like, you know, you left way more money on the table. So that's the way we look at it, especially if you look at it long term, right? Like, if when you do sell a finance, again, if you take a minimum of $300 for 60 months, that's $18,000.
So what got you into education? Like, what made you want to spread awareness and teach people how to actually do this?
Man, be honest, for myself, like, that was already my calling. I've been doing a lot of mentoring. I've already doing a lot of coaching. And honestly, God's high, I never would have saw myself. If God would have shown me the picture, like, yo, yeah, next year you about to be doing these mobile homes. I'm like, bro, come on, bro. Right. But it's just, he had a bigger picture for us. And I mean, both of us. And, man, it was just, like, dope to even see Sharnice just like, yeah, let's go, right?
Yeah, like I told him, like, once we did our first couple of deals, I think we said, like, right here, and I told him, like, we got to show this. We got to teach this to our people, because there's so many. I know so many other investors who have been trying to wholesale, who have been trying to get into traditional real estate. But, again, there's certain factors that have been stopping them, like credit, capital. They can't get started. So once I found this, I was like, come on, like, this is bigger than us. Like, this is for the people.
So I noticed you had to have students. So obviously they go through the webinar. Are you guys coaching them after as well and bringing them to their first deals?
Yeah, so we always say, anybody who invests in the program, like, you family, like, hit us up. Like, we don't want to, we're not that type of, like, okay, buy a program and then go out there on your own and do it, right? If you don't hit us up, that's on you, you know what I mean? But we really, it's like an open book, because that's the thing. It's just like, the more success that they have, like, that's just, I mean, that's joy for us, but it's just like, what we doing is just, we helping create wealth for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's dope. That's dope. So, all right. Well, thank you. We appreciate it.
This is
extremely educational. So, all right. What's the information for your courses? How can people contact you? How can they check out all of your programs that you have going?
Yeah. So, for one, man, Instagram is really our main page. Follow us at Mobile Home Elite Investors. There you can literally click the link in the bio. That can get you can get access to the course. We have a private Facebook group, an ebook. You even need a payment plan. That's what we have. Private coaching, whatever you really need. That's what we get our program to help everybody. We got something for everybody.
Dope. Troy.
Yeah, shout out to everybody on Patreon.com. That's our proud to pay program. Everybody that's been supporting on there, there's 5 tiers. You can join any tier that you like. There's bonus footage there. There's bonus content. I just want to give a good quick shout out to our new members, Jada and Marquise, and Christian and Derek as well. They've joined, and some of them have joined the tier 5, some joined the tier 2.
Hey, Byron. Hey, Sharnice. Welcome to the His and Her Money Show.
Hey, you guys.
Hello, hey. Hello.
We're glad to have you guys here, man.
Absolutely.
Y'all been making waves. Y'all been doing your thing, and
yes.
We came across you guys, and it was like, pump the brakes.
We
got to
get them on the show.
What did they just say?
Yeah.
You guys have found an expertise in the area of real estate investing that I know most people listening have not heard about, because when we first heard about it, it was like, wait a minute. You can do that? So we absolutely had to reach out to get you guys on the show so you can share your story and your wisdom with the audience today. But for those who may not know who you are, can you just take a moment and say hello to everybody that's tuned in right now and let them know what you guys are all about?
Yes. So, hi, I'm Sharnice.
And I'm Byron.
And together we make up the Mobile Home Elite Investors. So, I mean, what we do is in our name. We're full-time mobile home investors. But then on the flip side, we also have an educational program to teach investors out there how to get started as well.
Okay.
Awesome.
Did y'all hear that?
So they invest in mobile homes.
Mobile homes.
And that's why I'm so excited to have them on the show, because I know that you guys, we've had quite a few people writing into us, and they're loving the whole real estate thing that we have going on. But you guys also have an option to do this via mobile homes, right? And so we found a couple that is actually doing that. So first, tell us, how did you all even get started? Tell us a little bit about the backstory of how you guys actually got started into mobile home investing.
Yeah, so, man, March 3rd, 2017. That was the day I was fired from my job. And before that, I was trying to get into real estate for about 3 years. And the day before, I walked away from a deal because the basement had flooded. It was on the south side. And so now I'm thinking like, man, you know, what am I going to do? I got no job. How am I going to get a loan, a mortgage, and all this good stuff? And let's say times got hard about 3 months later. So now I'm driving rideshare, right? And I always listen to podcasts, right? Always listen to podcasts. I should have been listening to His and Her Money podcast at that time, right? But listen to podcasts. And one particular day, a podcast about mobile homes, I was driving and the couple in the back was like, can you turn that off? Wow, we want to listen to music. So I'm like, okay, let me turn this off. So I sent it to Sharnice, like, hey, listen to this. I think this one is going to be special.
Yeah, so he sent me that podcast, and it was a podcast. It was on Bigger Pockets. Don't remember the episode. It was about a couple of years ago. But that podcast was on mobile home investing. And like Byron said, at the time, we were both trying to acquire buildings here in Chicago. But due to capital, due to credit, that wasn't going to be our situation. So he sent me this podcast, and it was on mobile home investing. And the biggest thing I heard was you can start with low capital and very low credit. So that really stood out to me. So I came home and I actually started this. I said, hey, babe, we doing mobile homes. Like, I get it. You trying to do this thing with the buildings and everything. But I'm like, look, let's go ahead and go full force in a niche that nobody else is doing. And let's just see what we can do. And, man, we conquered it.
Yeah. All right. I love that.
Okay. All right. So you guys are from the same city we're from.
Chicago.
Okay. So I've never seen a mobile home in the city of Chicago, right? So what made you, as you listen to this, made you say, this is something that we could do?
Yes. So the biggest thing, once we kind of started doing our research, that's when our eyes start opening up. Like similar to you, I was like, I don't think there's no mobile homes in Chicago. So we just dug right in, and we started doing our homework, and I'm going to get the listeners. I'm going to give y'all some gems, okay? If you go to Google Maps and you type in mobile home parks, it would allow you to see all the mobile home parks all across wherever you're searching. And it lit up in Illinois. It was like, what? Is it this many mobile home parks?
Yeah. So, like right in our backyard, too, like Chicagoland area, like parks that we've been looking over, like, oh, yeah, they're right here.
Yeah, so we mapped them out. We put them in an Excel sheet, and we just literally started driving for dollars. Like, that was what we engulfed in. We went full-fledged in. We drove down to Cincinnati to go look at a mobile home. that's how bad we wanted it, and we knew, like, hey, we're going to find something.
Okay, now for people who have been researching, like they were like you said you spent 3 years trying to get into real estate investing before the mobile home investing thing popped up, right? So they might be in research mode and they hear about all these different strategies and ways by which you can invest in real estate. Why should they consider mobile home investing?
Great question. So for one, low entry costs, right? We tell people you can start as low as $5,000, low risk, right? When you're talking about when you're doing an investment from, let's say it's $20,000, right? But move-in ready $20,000, that's much different than getting a rehab at 60, putting another 50 into it, you're dealing with more money. Also, it's less strenuous, right? You're not really dealing, you can get a realtor, but you don't really have to. You're not really dealing with, the state of Illinois doesn't require inspections. A lot of states don't really require inspections of the mobile homes. And not saying that you should, you know, sell a lemon, but at the same time, you know, you're not dealing, you don't have to pay for a $400, $500 inspection, appraisals, all that added stuff that comes along with houses, you're not dealing with it. A mobile home is considered in most states a motor vehicle, right, or personal property. So with that, with those stipulations, you don't have as much responsibility with those.
Gotcha. So what do you say to people who say, they're investing in mobile homes, but it's not actually investing in the land, right? Like it's, I'm assuming that you guys, the way that you're making your money is off of rent. Is it still called rent for mobile? Okay. For mobile homes, is it still called rent when people rent them out, right? Okay. So talk about your process behind that, saying, I think that we can enter into the mobile homes and not necessarily physically buy a building, but you're buying a motor vehicle as you mentioned, right? So talk about your game plan and why did you guys choose that route?
Right. So when we first got started, of course, we're in mobile home communities. So we're owning the homes, right? So kind of like what you just described, but not owning the land. So when we first started out, we focused on flipping the homes. And then, of course, now we also do rent to own cash flow. But for our first deal, we purchased a home for $3,700. We ended up flipping that home for $9,500 in less than 30 days. Okay, so that home was move-in ready. It was a three-bedroom, two-bath. We didn't have to do any rehab for our first home. Now, again, we all get the question, like, how did you guys find this? It was a lot of heavy prospecting involved with that first deal and also some negotiation. But it worked out, and, again, we flipped that home. So now we ended up flipping it, again, still paying the lot rent to the park because the park still owns the land, but we just went ahead and made the profit off of the home.
Yeah. And then similar to when you look at like the renting phase, we look at most cars, when you go get a new car, you're going to have a term of anywhere from 3 to 6 years, right? Similar, we do the same thing with our seller finance. So, you know, instead of tell people, listen, you've been renting an apartment, you don't have any equity in this. But if you get on this term from 3 to 5 years for this house, it's going to be yours. And a lot of times we educate people. So, for example, like, a house we got a house before right at $1,500, right? And we were only taking $400 a month, but we put them on a 3-year term for $400 a month. So it's still affordable housing because the lot rent at that particular park was right at $350. So they're paying $750 a month. We're cash flowing right that $400, but at the end of that at the end of that term, they get to have their house. We pretty much quadrupled our money, but it's still affordable housing.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Now, you've thrown numbers out there like we got a spot for 1,500. We got a spot for the 35 and turned it into 9,000. Okay. All right. Everybody's listening now, guys. How do you go shopping for a mobile home? And how do you determine what's a good price to pay for a mobile home? Is it similar to physical structures where you go and you look at comps? You can see how many buildings in that area sold in the last 6 months. And, you know, you can kind of figure out what's a fair number. You consider, you know, rehab costs. Do you apply that same mindset to mobile homes when you're prospecting? And how do you come up with your number?
All right, great question. So one of the biggest things we tell people, most of our deals come from literally driving for dollars. So we're in the parks looking for sale signs. We're going into the office, talking to a park manager, hey, what do you have? You know, introducing ourselves, let them know what service we can provide by helping them to occupy homes. And so with that, that's what a lot of online resources, Craigslist, a lot of different apps like Let Go and things like that you can go on. But the biggest thing is getting out there in the field. When it comes to comps, like you said, like traditional houses, the only thing you can compare is to the houses in the neighborhood. So the knowledge that we're learning from park managers, hey, are you guys getting cash buyers or are you guys getting people that need payments? And that can help us gauge, you know, are we going to do a flip or are we going to try to do payments? So my biggest thing is for us, we stand at the price range under the $5,000. Like, I don't care if it's a 2019, I'm not paying $40,000 for a mobile home because I'm finding 1991s for $3,000, you know, $3,000. So I'm like, yo, like, as long as we can keep finding these, we're going to stay under this price range. So with that being said, like, when it comes to comps, normally what we do is if I buy a house at $3,000, I'm going to list it for $10,000, right? And I'm going to see, and at the end of the day, if I get somebody to purchase for $7,000, it's still a huge win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. So let's go back a little bit because I think that your story, both of your story, is so phenomenal in how you guys actually got started. So I don't want to skip over that. So you were driving. At this point, you lost your job, and you were driving, wasn't Uber, it was
Lyft.
Okay. So you were driving Lyft, and you heard this podcast. You sent it to your wife. Your wife did what she always does, what the woman always does. We get it done. She went home and was like, we're doing this. You all did that, right? So talk about the process from now losing your job, driving, and now owning a mobile home. So walk us through that process. What did you all do? Did you all find a realtor? Like, did you all do all of this yourselves? What did you invest in to learn the knowledge? What did you guys do to actually get your first deal?
Yeah, so really, I love that you said let's back up to the story part, because I don't think I said that I had lost my job as well.
Wow.
Right, so we both had lost
our
job. And I also, look, I call myself the app girl, because at that point, I was on Lyft, Amazon Flex, Instacart, any app that you can log into your phone and make money, I was doing that. Because I was already in a mindset knowing that I didn't necessarily want to go back to a sit-down 9-to-5 job. I'm like, look, I'd rather hustle these apps until this mobile home thing just hooks up. So that's what I did. Byron, he had that same mentality. And yeah, when we first dug into the mobile home thing, like, we didn't get a realtor. Like, honestly, this was all us. This was us getting out in the field, researching, finding other potential investors who have done some deals, and just really, like, learning from the school of other hard knocks. Like, just really getting out there and just seeing it for ourselves.
Yeah, because it wasn't too much. It wasn't too much information out there at the time. You know, a few YouTube videos, and it told about a little how, but you had to invest in that program to learn more, and we didn't, right? And I would say that our biggest break, where we learned a lot of information. So when we first started, like, we were cold calling parks. Like, Charnice had called at least like 175 parks. I called about 100, and we got so many no's, right? And the vice president of a company, which is the fifth largest mobile home park company in the country, right? We're $14 billion. The VP called Charnice and said, hey, you've been calling my parks. What's going on? And Charnice told him, like, hey, look, we new to this and everything. So he said, okay, cool. You know what? If you guys ever out in Denver, we would love to meet you guys and kind of like what you're doing. You got access to most of our parks.
We immediately booked that trip. Like, we got to get out there. I'm like, if he going to give us access, I'm like, come on, man. We got to get out there. So, yeah. So, we sat out there. We sat down. And even in that meeting within itself, like, he gave us so much game and just so much, like, salute for us even, like, starting this, being African-American as well, coming into a niche where you don't see a lot of people who look like us. He even was like, man, you guys are doing the right thing.
Wow. I have so many questions.
Wow.
First off, that's incredible. I love that. Talk about favor, right? So I love that. So I have another question. How do these parks work? I'm assuming that they're sort of like condos in a sense, right? Where not all condo units allow you to rent out, right, their particular unit. So how does the whole park, how does that work?
So really, we always say you're looking for an investor-friendly park. Now, it's over 44,000 mobile home parks in the United States, right? In Illinois alone, we're 1,198 right now. So 1,198 mobile home parks in Illinois. So right now, institutionally owned, 4,000, right? 4,000, so 10% of these parks are owned. So now all these pops are still, we call them mom and pop parks, right? They're still owned. They've been in the family since the 50s, you know, the 60s. And so it really depends. Most of the institutional parks, they don't mind. They like investors because we help them sell homes, right? They're a park manager. They don't have to sell homes or anything like that. So they lick their chops when we come in, like, yes, come. So the older mom and pop parks, they're more the ones who are going to give you more pushback because they want to keep all the margins. For them, they look at it like, why should I sell you this home when I can turn around and make the same amount of money on the home? So that's when you get a lot of that pushback from, you know, some of those parks. But again, when you get like Shiny Snap, we only do business in two parks now, and it keeps us fully, fully occupied.
How many mobile homes have you guys invested in yourselves personally?
So now we just hit that, we're right at that 25 mark.
Yeah, great.
Wow, man, in two years,
that's
right?
That's great. Going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
It'll be 2 years, January 2020. Yeah.
So who actually owns then the mobile homes? I know that we keep talking about parks and things like that. Like, who actually owns the mobile homes? Is it the parks? Are you buying it from the park?
Yeah, sometimes we can be buying it from the park itself, but other times we can actually be buying it just from individual sellers who just don't know how to sell their home, or they've been trying to sell their home for so long, and we come in and we offer, you know, what we're going to pay for it.
Yeah, and so when it comes, like, the ownership, like, so mobile homes are pretty much, again, just like a vehicle. So they have titles. Like in the state of Texas, they got, it's called, like, SOLs, but they are titles. So, for example, in a mobile home park, when you're the title owner, you own that asset, but you're just renting the land, like how you said earlier about like a condo.
you're just renting the land or leasing the land from the park. So you can technically move your home, right? But you don't see that many homes being moved like that. But you have the, you know, you can definitely still move your home if you like.
Everyone knows why life insurance is important, but many of us choose to ignore the reality of what would happen if we were to die suddenly without proper protection. The results could be devastating for your surviving family members, leaving them with a large bill for your final expenses, or even worse, loss of the family home because they can no longer cover the mortgage.
Term life insurance gives you peace of mind at a price you can afford. Term life insurance allows you to meet your financial obligations today while still protecting your family's future tomorrow.
If you don't currently have a life insurance policy, you are not alone. According to Life Insurance Statistics and Facts, which is a report put out by the life insurance industry, about 43% of the population don't own a life insurance policy in any amount.
Wow. Buying life insurance doesn't have to be complicated. Legal & General America make it easy for you to protect your family's financial future.
As one of the nation's leaders in low-cost, high-quality life insurance to over 1.3 million families, they know how to protect you.
Legal & General America makes understanding and applying for life insurance easy. You can get a free quote by going to hisorhermoney.com/LGA. The links are also in the description box below.
So you all not only have done this for yourselves, but you've taught a whole lot of other people how to do it as well. What do you see as common mistakes that people make when they try to become mobile home investors?
Moving too fast. Not, you know, getting the information and not looking through the entire information. Like one thing, like I was talking about earlier, some parks don't really want investors in there. So they will get a property and just hear the numbers like, oh, I see a property for $2,000, they'll buy it and not knowing what to do with it. Or the biggest mistake I see is somebody's advertising a home needs to be moved, right, off their property, and they don't have a home for it. So now you're stuck, you're trying to find a home, and you don't even know where this mobile home should be going.
Exactly, and I want to jump in as far as the moving, because when you see a lot of homes that need to be moved online, they're going to be advertised as free. So as a new investor, like, you're excited, like, oh my God, a free mobile home. But like Byron said, if you don't have a place for your home, then now you're stuck, especially if it's a free home that needs a lot of money as far as rehab. Now you're really stuck. So at the end of the day, you got to have your beginning strategy and your end strategy, no matter what the situation is for the mobile home.
Yes, definitely. And costs. I would say another thing is they don't really incorporate all the costs, right? We encourage that you got holding costs, right? It could be lot rent. You always want to have a cash reserve. Just because the house costs this much, just like a traditional house, if you got 150, but you know the budget, you still at least need another 175 or something like that, just to have that cash reserve just in case anything goes wrong. And some people, you know, they don't really look at, they look at, oh, I got $2,000 right now, let me go buy it. And still get holding costs. Mm-hmm.
So how do you guys find people to rent your mobile homes? Is it easy?
When you think about it, it doesn't seem like,
you don't really hear,
it's
well,
like the sexy thing to do to go rent a mobile home. But obviously,
for some, yeah,
you guys are killing the game. So
yeah,
obviously there's people who are cool with,
yeah,
who like mobile homes.
Yeah.
So you guys got to remember, we're from Chicago. So when it comes to like our market, it is a huge stigma when it comes to mobile homes. But like Byron said, it's over 44,000 mobile home parks. And it's also 22 million Americans still to this day that still live in mobile homes. So when you think about people who are looking for this affordable housing, they're out there.
Yeah. And that's what I was about to say. I actually like it because I think that it's affordable, right? A lot of times it's probably even more affordable sometimes than renting, physically like renting, right, at a condo or something like that. So I love that option for you guys. So how do you all find people to rent these places?
Yeah, so the biggest thing we do, we create buyers lists. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just like we tell people, I'm going to give them some secret sauce on this one. All right. Just like you see, we buy houses, we buy mobile homes. You put it around the neighborhoods, right? That's how we get it. And then we'll put up different ads for houses. We'll test the market out. So we'll put out some houses out there in their market and start collecting data. We're real big on collecting data, right? I want to know, you know, what do you work at? How long you been working there? How much you make a month? What's your credit looking like? Because now that can help me determine how can I help you the best. And so normally you can have a great relationship with a mobile home park as well. Our park managers are sending us leads. So they call us when people need help. They call us when people need help to sell their house. And they're calling us when people, because they get people coming to the park all day, every day, looking for affordable housing. So they'll let us know as well.
All right. Now, you talked about different costs that we need to consider outside of the purchase. So you mentioned like $1,500, $3,000, $5,000, right, to get a home. Then on the back end, I mean, because these prices sound like unbelievable, right? How much work then are these mobile homes look like?
On average, rehab, how much are you putting into a mobile home? Yeah, to like get it fixed and turn it around.
Make it nice.
Yeah.
So for us, our formula, we look at we best look at move-in ready homes, meaning like I don't want to pay no more than $2,000 to put into the house. Normally a full gut, like if you're like a type of, hey, I'm like a DIY, a full rehab on a mobile home, like that is just, you're on a high-end $12,000. And most mobile home parks don't even spend that. They'll rather scrap that home or get a new home versus spending that. So for us, we encourage people to try to stay under that $4,000 range. Like if it's livable, if somebody already lives in it and you got to come in and do just cosmetic work, right, just maybe, you know, replace a toilet or some floors or things like that, stay under that $2,000, $3,000 mark at most. And then the other holding cost, lot rent, right? We talk about the HOA fees. The average lot rent in America is $375. So, you know, we always tell people put at least 3 to 4 months aside a lot rent just in case. But the goal is to sell the house way before those three, you know, those 4 months or so. And then just always having cash reserve, you know, what if a window gets broke or something like that, right? You know, you just want to have some little extra cash just in case money. But it's really not a lot, right? It's, again, I'm still talking numbers under, you know, $4,000 to the side just to have safety, you know, a good cushion.
So is your process, do you guys just buy these to turn around and flip them, or are you holding them?
So,
we do both. So when we first started, we mainly focused on the flipping because we like we got to keep making money to reinvest. But as, you know, our processes got better, our strategies got faster, then we started the holding process.
Gotcha.
Wow. Now, who collects the rent? Because I've never heard a property manager that deals with mobile homes, but you said there's a park manager. So are you collecting the rent? Is the park manager collecting rent? What's that like?
So if we have them on terms, right? Let's say, you know, we have them on a term. So it's split up, right? They pay the park their portion of the lot fee. Then they pay us. All of our stuff is online, right? They can either pay directly into our bank account, but most, and we have everybody paying online. Again, I'm giving y'all some gems. We use Cozy.co, which is pretty much just a free landlord, website. So, we get our payments. They pay, and only time they got to hear from us is they don't pay out. You know, they after the fifth, that's when they gonna have to get that phone call.
I like that. Now, talk about, because you guys are 25 or so properties in, I'm curious as to how do you decide, because you all do this full time, how do you all decide we're going to bring this much home versus we're going to reinvest this much? Like, how do you take proceeds from property A and move it to try to get property B and property C? What does that look like?
Man, so the cool thing, man, shout out our guy Malcolm, man, our economist. He kind of helped us structure where our account. So in that business, our account is set up where when a profit comes, all right, we give ourselves 50%. So we have that 50%. We allow 30% for expenses. And then we put 15% to the side of that for taxes. And the rest of that 10% is profit. So from us, we really actually, instead of really paying ourselves, a lot of times we taking that money that we paid ourselves and we going right back out there and reinvesting because it's just addictive, man. I ain't gonna lie, it's addictive. Right.
So how long did the process take you guys? For both of you, both lost your job, right? And you all were working hard to try to bring income into the household. How long was the process from that point to you guys actually just getting full-fledged into this mobile home investing?
So really, I would say for myself, it took about close to like a year and 4 months for the turnaround.
I feel like mine was fast. Like Byron always jokes and says, like, man, I just jumped into this entrepreneurial journey because it literally took me like less than 6 months. Like, he can tell you, like, I was full force. And I told him, like, I was not going back to a desk job. So that just was not going to happen for me. So, yeah, I went full force into mobile home investment.
Yeah, and it was like, you know, when you start having those months, you know, our first month we made that $19,500. Then the next month, you know, it was slower to us, but the next month we made a $12,000. Then the next month, it was like it was going down at first. And the next month we made $7,000. We like, right. But it was still good because, like, yo, this sustainable for both of us. Mm-hmm. And then we picked back up. And then once we launched the educational piece, that kind of made us kind of go harder because it was like, okay, while we're teaching people, we got to show them as well.
Yeah,
so, so better deals came, more opportunities came, and, it's been fun.
Love that.
Nice.
Talk about your help. So talk about the people that you all have to have in place to help you all run this company. I'm assuming you all have a good accountant, right? So talk about some of the people.
Rehabbers.
Yeah, right, rehabbers and things like that. Talk about some of your team.
Yeah, so the cool thing, when we first started, it was straight family. You know, her father, his friend, I had an uncle that kind of did some of the investing as well.
My mom is also an accountant, so I had her looking at some of our stuff in the beginning. It was strictly just family at first.
Yeah, and as we expanded, then we got a team. Even our team right now, our team is five guys. If we need a rehab, we don't use them that much. They kind of get mad at me because I don't really have work for them like that. But, you know, as far as that, you know, with the accountant, we end up reaching out. We got a great accountant / you could say business consultant. Mm-hmm. And honestly, now we automated a lot of things. Automated, you know, CRMs are huge when it comes to the business. And so it kind of allows us to, we created a system where it's even our homes, like when it comes, if we purchase a home, we mainly go to the home maybe three times before we actually sell it. And I mean, literally we showing up to purchase it. We might go out there to take a look and see what we need. And after that, we sending everybody else out there, put their lockbox on there. And then when it's time to close, that's the last time we see in that house.
Talk about the purchase for those who may be looking at purchasing. Are there loans? Are banks giving loans for mobile homes, or is this cash buyers, right? Is this all cash? How's the financing, or if there is financing at all with it?
Nice. So most banks do not lend a mobile home. So that's why that nice guy, Mr. Warren Buffett, he got involved in this business. So he owns two of the largest mobile home lending companies, 21st Mortgage and Vanderbilt Mortgage Company. So he lends to people who are looking for newer mobile homes. And that's why we offer seller financing, because we understand that most people, they can't go get a bank loan. So with us, we look at it like, let's become the bank. And, you know, with us owning this asset, we can create not only passive income, but we still create affordable housing, and it's a win-win for us all.
So let's break that down. So you buy a mobile home with your money, then you find someone to technically be a renter for a while, but they are paying to get to an endpoint to where they become the owners from you. That's what you mean by seller financing, correct?
Yes.
Awesome. Now, let's talk about, because you mentioned accounting, let's talk about the tax implications. Because with the traditional way of flipping, let's just say flipping the house, right? The property or the proceeds that you get, there's capital gains taxes, and you got to account for that, or you got to roll the proceeds into a 1031 exchange to put those taxes off to the side for later on. How does that work with mobile homes? Because earlier you said it's not considered a house, it's considered a motor vehicle. So when you find a mobile home for three and then you flip it at 9 or 10, what are the tax implications for you?
Oh man,
I
love it. So first I'm gonna talk about the property taxes, or I guess you could say, the property tax of the mobile home. So in Illinois, I remember when we didn't really know, we kind of thinking higher taxes. When we first went to go pay taxes for the mobile home, we in Loves Park, and they said, okay, the taxes for the year, $167. We like, what? $167?
In Chicago?
So we like, cool. So then again, a story about Indiana. One time I go, they tell me I have back taxes on the house. I'm like,
oh
man.
You're so stressed out, you guys.
I'm like, yo, so let me, how much lay it on me? They said $37. I say, what
a year.
You're not watching the YouTube. You can only see their faces.
I pulled out them two 20.
Yeah, real fast.
Real fast, like, here you go.
So you change your mind and change that number, right? I love it.
So normally, so for most all of our houses, we definitely put the title. I mean, we've learned, you know, to really protect our assets, we put our titles in our LLC, then we roll that over to a trust. So for each individual house, you know, I mean, our accountant has it. I'm not sure what exactly they do, but of course the profit that we gain, we pay taxes for that at the end of the year. But I mean, the taxes on the houses are little to nothing.
Mm-hmm. And last tax type question, just out of curiosity, do you get any of the same tax advantages like appreciation, depreciation, things like that? Or is that out the window because this is, again, considered a motor vehicle?
Yeah, that's the only drawback. Yeah, you're not getting any tax breaks, anything like that. If there is, man, listen, if you're listening, please let
right,
them know. Yeah.
But what I love about this strategy though is that is because they say in real estate investing, cash flow is king.
Yep.
And so with mobile home investing, you have the potential to make some great cash flow,
mm-hmm.
you know, just off a few deals,
mm-hmm.
and low barrier to entry. So I think that's what's super dope about what you all are doing and what you all are teaching. So somebody listening right now is like fired up. They're like, man, I'm getting in this game. He had back taxes of $37. Let me in. Open the door. Let me in. What's your advice to that person that's listening, that's chomping at the bit to get started? How do they get started the right way?
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, we always tell you about educating yourself, right? Just really, you know, utilizing the resources that not only we have, but that are out there for you. But the biggest thing is get out there. Like finally, we talked about the Google Map search. You know, go to Google Maps, search mobile home parks, see those, map them out, put them in an Excel sheet, and start getting out there. Just start getting acclimated. Start taking a look. Don't be scared. A lot of people try to do this straight from their laptop and their phone.
No, and I always tell people, you have to get out in the field. Like, we get people that kind of message us and call us like, is it okay to get out the car? I'm like, yes, get out the car. Don't introduce yourself to the sellers. Like, that's what you have to do in this business. This is not an online business. You got to get out in the field.
Oh,
great advice.
I guess maybe the parks handle this. How do you guys handle, like, snow and is there grass and things like that? Like, who takes care of the land? Is it the mobile park landowners?
Manager.
Yeah. Are they the ones that take care of it?
So you are responsible for that pad. So when we first started, that was about building relationships. We had to find out. Like for myself, I always find like a young kid. If I see a young kid, I'm like, hey, you got Cash App or you got anything? If you make sure my lawn is mowed, you know, I'm going to pay you $30 every time you mow it. You know, same snow, you don't really have to worry about. We had our first, like, it wasn't really that costly because, again, plumbing, we had like some pipes that froze on us. Again, in a regular house, could you imagine how much that cost? That only cost us $750. But now it's because it was, remember before, right before that, like that cold polar vortex that we had?
Yeah.
Our window broke.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It was that cold.
It was that cold.
Yeah, it was that cold. But the gas company did not come the day before because we were trying to get the gas cut on so we can keep the heat on, keep, you know, make sure the water's running, but they didn't come out in time. And that froze. So normally, I mean, really a tip for you guys, if you, and you know, of course the climate where it gets really cold, you definitely want to make sure that heat is running and just kind of just keep a faucet running, you know, throughout the house to kind of make sure you keep that flow of water going.
Awesome. Well, I know that a lot of people are like, oh my goodness, I want you guys to teach me. So tell everybody first, where can they find you and what are some of the tools and resources that you guys have to actually teach them how to do this as well?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, honestly, we got several things. We got ebooks, we got courses. We rolled out group coaching. We have a Facebook group. But listen, they can find us. They've got to make sure they go to hisandhermoney.com/mobile home. So that way you can get that course.
Love it. Awesome. So we'll make sure that we have the links in the show notes. Go to hisandhermoney.com/mobile homes. But also, where can they find you guys at online?
Yeah, y'all big on IG. Tell them about that.
Oh, man. So, yeah, you can find us on IG at Mobile Home Elite Investors. Same name on Facebook, at Mobile Home Elite Investors. And then subscribe to our YouTube as well, and that's MH Elite Investors.
Awesome. All right. Have all the links?
We'll put all the links down in the show notes. Man, Byron, Sharnice, number one, amazing. Salute to y'all.
Yes, good job, you
because
guys.
Because y'all had crazy resilience. Let things like take you. You let the hard times inspire you to be better.
I love it.
So that in itself is an inspiration
Absolutely.
To us and to everybody listening. And And then kudos for you all for figuring this out and then being kind enough to now turning around and sharing what you've learned to help other people elevate as well. So salute to you guys. Thanks so much for sharing with our audience.
Thank you.
Thank y'all for having us, man. Y'all phenomenal. Keep doing what y'all rock stars. I love it.